Hello, you are listening to Talking Points on BoardGameAuthority.com. I am your host, Richard Miles. My guest today is Josh Bricker from the Flux Capacity, and Josh has an active project on Kickstarter called Gone Viking. Hi, Josh. Welcome, and thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
It's my pleasure, Richard. I'm happy you had time to speak with me.
No problem at all. All right, let's get right into it. Tell us a little bit about Gone Viking.
Sure. So Gone Viking is basically at heart a trick-taking card game, but we've played on that Viking theme quite a bit by adding three major differences than other trick-taking card games. The first one is we added a resource collection element. So there's four suits in Gone Viking, and each suit has a resource sort of associated with it. So for instance, the suit, we have a hammer's suit, which is also associated with the god Thor. And what happens is that when you're taking tricks during the game, you actually earn those resources when you take tricks with that suit. And the reason that's important is because the object of the game is to reach a certain amount of resources of these plunder tokens before everyone else does. So you collect these plunder tokens throughout the game by taking tricks, and you're strategically trying to take certain tricks. So you want to end up with one of each suit or one of each plunder token type, because you can cash them in for a Viking ship token, which protects them. And the reason you need to protect them is because of the second cool element of this game, that is the person who's in first place at the end of every round, who has the most wealth, gets sort of taxed by a jarl, and the jarl of the clan comes and takes half of the unprotected wealth from the richest player. So it's kind of frustrating to come in first in this game.
So that sounds pretty interesting. In most games, you know, the object is you want to come in first, right? You want to be the best.
And well, so especially with trick-taking card games, because you kind of want to just take tricks. But in this one, you definitely want to take certain tricks. And also, sometimes you want to give people tricks so that you don't come in first.
Right. Yeah. So in some trick-taking games, you can be like sandbagged, right? And this is a little bit of a twist on that, where the Jarl just comes in and says, they're mine. Give it.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Well, and that it's sort of like this come in second mechanic, right? But we've put one more or a couple more things interesting in this game. We have this thing called boosting, which is essentially normally in a trick taking card game, you're only allowed to play one card. In Gone Viking, you can play two cards of the same suit to make a higher number. And the reason we did that was so that you could strategically get the suits you needed to buy the ships so that you can protect them from the Jarl.
Nice. That sounds cool.
Yeah, so, and then the last kind of difference that Gone Viking has over other games is the Viking gods. So at the top of every suit, the highest card value is the Viking god that's associated with each one of those plunder token items and suits, which is we have Thor and Loki and Freya and Odin. So each one of those has the ability to be played as a very high value for that suit, but also has the ability to be played as a god, and they have certain powers. So only one god can be in play at a time, and players have to learn strategically how to use the powers of these gods to further their game. For instance, when Freya is the active god during the game, everyone who takes tricks also gets a coin plunder item, which is her suit. So, and then if Loki is the god in power, it's the lowest card that wins the trick as opposed to the highest card. So it really changes the dynamic of the game. And then at the end of every raid, which is basically a round of tricks, each god has a home power, and those home powers will give a slight advantage to the player who played that god at the end. So there is this competitive element about deciding whether to use these gods to win tricks, whether to use them to earn resources at the end of the round. So that's a really cool element of Gone Viking. It's one of the things that I like most about the game, for sure.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. I'll tell you, just for personally, Vikings as a theme, like you've already got me sold. and I think that there are going to be people out there like myself who just like that kind of, you know, Norse mythology, the Viking folklore that's around, and like that just appeals to a lot of people. So to see this in I can't say a familiar setting, but the trick taking is, you know, a lot of people are familiar with that. So I think pairing those two, I think that's a great thing.
Well, an interesting story is the first time I played this game, it wasn't a Viking game. It had a different theme altogether. And when I played it, when I was talking to the designer about how we want to, because I really liked the game and I just wanted to get the game published, And we decided what would be a great theme to fit with this. And we thought, well, what are you doing in this game? You're taking resources, you're trying to steal them from other people. You're doing this. It's very Viking-esque. And we're like, okay, it's perfect. I mean, we've got these suits that need to be represented by the Viking gods. And each one of those gods has a kind of history. So we can play on the history of those gods, make their powers relevant, and also make the players feel like they're actually going on raids, right? So that's the whole, that's why I think that theme ties really well with this trick-taking game for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. So speaking of the designer, that is Francois Valentine?
Yep, Francois Valentine, yep.
So how did that, how did you guys connect with him? He's not an unknown. I mean, he's got other games out.
Sure. It's a great story, actually. We have a really strong game design community in Toronto. There's a lot of gamers in this city. And one of our, you've probably heard of Snakes and Lattes, which is a board game cafe here. A lot of people know about it. Anyway, they're very supportive of the game design community. So they have like a monthly meetup there. And that's where I met Francois, and I just randomly sort of sat down at a table with him and played another game that he is working on. That was about a year ago, and we just started talking. I started talking about how I was kind of like trying to design games but getting stuck, and it was big. It was really frustrating to me, but I was very interested in the publishing business, and I wanted to run a Kickstarter. And then we decided to publish Give It to the King, which was the first Kickstarter we ran, and then that game's now in the in distribution.
Okay, who was the designer on that game?
He was the designer. That's why we sort of we kind of partnered up to get the company off the ground and work together to build like just a nest of what of his designs that were pretty close to completion, so that there wasn't too much work ahead of us. Of course, there's always more work than you think, but it was a really cool. It's a great partnership because he's really into the design element, and he's been doing it for a long time. I don't know if you read the page, but he also designed one of the first Ticket to Ride expansion,
right,
which was the Legendary Asia. And he's also published another card game a while back called Chaos with a couple of his brothers, I think.
Right. Yeah. So both of those are pretty successful. That's why I brought up that question. I mean, I can't say he's kind of a big deal or anything, but I mean, he's kind of a big deal, right? I mean, he's got some published games under his belt.
Yeah, that was one thing that sort of attracted me to work with him, not because we're trying to play off his success or anything, but just because he's got such a wealth of knowledge in the whole game, board gaming business and industry. When I first started, I knew virtually nothing about manufacturing and production, pre-production and all those things. And so he really helped me kind of get started in that respect. And so now I've been able to sort of handle most of that stuff on my end, and he's able to concentrate more on the game development and things like that, because we have a bunch of games currently in development, and he's helping work through the process for all of them.
And so with the games that are in development, how are you finding those designers? Is it a similar process where you're meeting at a local gaming group, or how are you finding them?
The community is really strong here, as I mentioned. So that, I mean, everybody sort of knows each other. We go to these Protospiel events. We had one in the Hamilton area in, I think it was September or October, in the fall anyway. And I found one game that I was really interested in there. Actually ended up being two games that I was really interested in from there, as well as some games that we just know through people in the community. So they're all kind of local to the Ontario area.
Sounds great. So the Flux Capacity, that is the name of your company.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that. Who makes up the team?
Well, it's me and Francois right now. We both have day jobs. We're kind of doing this as a side gig. The other designers obviously are part of our team as well. Some of them want to be more involved in the development than others, and whatever they're comfortable with is sort of how we're going about working with them. In terms of the artwork, for the Gone Viking, we got a local artist who's also a game designer to help us out with that. And we're really trying to stick to local, and I want to say outsourcing, but it's more than that. It's kind of like we're trying to build a community of artists, illustrators, graphic designers, and game designers. So we're really hoping to become more of like a collective type of organization, very community driven.
Well, that sounds awesome. I think a sense of community for most gamers is pretty important. So I think that's great what you guys are trying to do.
Exactly. I mean, why are all these people designing games and hanging out with each other? Because they like doing it, right? So it's kind of the process should be an enjoyable one. I think board gaming is that of a labor of love. It's not, the most profitable business in the world, but it's definitely something that's enjoyable for everybody from all aspects, I think.
Right. So let's talk about the Kickstarter campaign a little bit. A lot of games, board games, card games, it doesn't matter, have pretty high funding goals, a lot higher than Gone Viking's funding goal, which is $5,000. How were you able, or what was the determining factor that $5,000 was the funding goal?
Actually, a lot of thought goes into that funding goal. So I don't know how many kind of people you've spoken to about how they choose their funding goal, but the it's tough. It's really tough because if you choose a very high funding goal, which we did with our first campaign for Give It to the King, we're a fairly unknown publishing company at this time, so we didn't make it. We had to relaunch that campaign with a lower funding goal, so we halved it almost in that second time we went. As for the 5,000 for Gone Viking, it's a card game. It's got some tokens in it, so what we've done is we've sort of made an agreement with the manufacturer that we can handle developing that game at that price point. So we're also not, it's not our first time. So we are supplementing that cost of development and cost of manufacturing a little bit ourselves. It's just nature of the business to kind of make a fund goal that's kind of realistic for everybody. That's, we didn't want to come in at one of these like $1,000 deals, which there are people that pop up with that all the time now, and you see them all funded in the first day or the first hour or whatever, right? Yeah, but I mean, how can they produce a game for $1,000? It's impossible. Anyone who sees that should know that they're doing that for effect or whatever. I mean, you can do it however you want. That's the beauty of Kickstarter. But we decided that we would set it at a realistic goal. $5,000 seemed like an average kind of amount. People would be comfortable with that, considering we are new to the business still. And it was fairly arbitrary, to be honest. It was just like, okay, well, what's realistic? What can we afford to do is what we kind of based it on, right?
No, taking the more conservative approach, I think, will pay off. I've talked to a few people that, much like yourself, with their first campaign, their funding goal was $18,000, $20,000, something like that, and it didn't happen. So then they lowered it, like you said, maybe about half or whatever. And the second time, they funded successfully and was able to, produce their game. Yeah, I was just interested in that aspect. I mean, every game you see is different, right? I mean,
Exactly.
it could have almost the exact same components,
Well, and
right?
the truth is too, the one thing that people are have to, the components are, fairly determinant in what the cost is going to be, but more so the quantity of order is really going to be the determinant factor. So our plan with Gone Viking is to do a pretty substantial order because we want a good chunk of these to go into distribution with the rest of our products. So that's another reason why we can get the cost down.
Yeah, it scales a little bit when you order more, the price per unit goes down. So, yeah, that's awesome.
A little bit is an understatement. It's a huge
Right,
bit. A
right.
huge bit. Yeah. Yeah.
So, speaking of manufacturing, on your Kickstarter page, some people seem to kind of go around the issue of who their manufacturer
Sure.
is. And you, on your page, just come out and say, we're manufacturing with Wingo.
Yeah.
And they are, say they're one of the top. There's Panda. A lot of people go with Panda. There's Wingo. There's like Longpack. There's a few other players that are in China. But Wingo, I would say, is definitely in the top of that list. How difficult was it to determine Wingo is my manufacturer?
Well, Wingo manufactured Give It to the King. We had a really good experience with them. Their engineers are working with us regularly, like on a daily basis. We're able to contact them directly and we get responses almost instantly. So the service is what sold me on Wingo. When we got to Give It to the King back, obviously the quality also sold me on them. They have their own factory. They're not outsourcing to anybody else. They're manufacturing it themselves. And I'm actually going there in 2 weeks to visit them. And
Wow,
we're
nice.
also, yeah, we have a good experience with them. They're a good company. They deserve the press if we can give it to them. So that's why I'm not interested in hiding where we're getting it manufactured. So if people want to contact them and they can ask them if that's where we're getting it made and they should say yes, that's where it's happening. We're like, our whole goal is transparency. There's no point in hiding what you're doing on Kickstarter, I don't think. I don't think it pays off in the end. So that's where we're getting it made. We're getting it fulfilled by Snakes and Lattes. Any questions about the campaign, I'm happy to answer them and exactly what's happening, because I think that the point of Kickstarter is to build a relationship with your backers, build a community around the game, and what better way to do that than with transparency? So that was one of the things we learned on our first time around. But the other reason for Wingo is because we're trying to build a little bit of a strategic partnership to offer manufacturing through our company alongside them to help them represent the company a little bit more in North America. So it's cool. It's a great company to work with, and they've been really good to us.
Yeah, sounds great. Sounds great. You mentioned you have some other games in the works. When can we expect to see those?
Well, we're launching another Kickstarter campaign on around April 15th. So that will be for our next game, which is called Voodoo Island. It's a tactical tile laying zombie escape game. So you're the two-player version anyway is a game where you're an explorer and you are trying to explore an island, and you keep turning over these zombie tiles, and you have to eventually get away from all the zombies and back to your beach to be rescued. So it's kind of like a voodoo mind control zombie as opposed to a brain eating zombie game. It's definitely pre-Romero style right. Zombie.
So in other words, the good style of zombie, right?
And I don't want to judge, man. Whatever right. People love, yeah. But there's enough of those brain-eating zombie games, which are really cool. We want to take a little bit of a different approach. They're definitely, they act a little different. They have their own AI when you play in the solo version of the game. And this game that we're releasing is more of a platform, so it's going to be easily developable for other game designers to build scenarios using the method that Francois developed for this game.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, and this time we're taking a different approach where we're putting like minis in this game. It's not going to be meeples or anything like that. We're definitely going a little bit bigger, a little bit more sort of Kickstarter-y, if you want right. to make a word out of it. And so that page, we're working on the page right now. I want to make sure that it's pretty tweaked before we launch it, but we will be showing that page off either right when Gone Viking ends or just before for sure.
Okay, and what was the date we should look for that again?
It's going to be mid-April. Around the 15th is launch date. I'm going to be in China for the first 2 weeks of April, so I wanted to make sure that I got back in time to right. and launch it.
All right, well, we'll be looking forward to that. And last question, what is one piece of advice that you have for someone interested in creating a Kickstarter campaign?
Read everything by Stagmeyer and James Mathey and all the other amazing resources that people and blog sites that people have written about Kickstarter. That's number one. And the second thing that I would say is start as early as possible for your Kickstarter campaign. Show off what you have early enough to build a little hype. And the third one would be social media, social media, social media. And those are the three major things. Then you want to work at, while this is all happening, I guess getting all your manufacturing in order and all that stuff. But start with those three, because there's so much information out there on how to run a successful Kickstarter. And the more reading you do, the better informed you'll be, so that you don't end up having to relaunch your campaign, which, I mean, isn't the end of the world, but it's definitely a lot of work and time.
Right, right. So we are running at time. Josh, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. Gone Viking is live on Kickstarter right now. As of recording this, it has 12 days to go. It's 65% funded, so we need some of you people to go and back that project. Josh, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. It's awesome talking to you.
You've been listening to Richard Miles with BoardGameAuthority.com. My guest was Josh Bricker. He has an active Kickstarter campaign running right now called Gone Viking. Please head over to Kickstarter and show him some support.